Brian Lloyd is here to tell you what you can watch over the weekend if you feel like going out to the big screen in your local flea pit or cinema or whatever it is, or at home on your DVDs, whatever. So, what's on the big screen?
Well, the first one I have is Fruitvale Station. This is the film with Michael B. Jordan and Octavia Spencer. It is the story of what led up to the Oakland riots of 2009. It was this really... you know, really, really period of unrest in California. It tells the story of Oscar Grant III and, you know, a young man struggling to provide for his family without having to resort to crime and drugs. He is, you know, former ex-convict. It follows him from New Year's Eve in 2008 when he goes about his day, basically just, you know, getting his life together, trying to set himself straight and, you know, set himself straight for the new year. He... unfortunately boards a train at Fruitvale Station, and I suppose it all kind of kicks off from there. The, you know, it was a very, like, I mean, they used actual footage from the incident that led to it, yeah.
Now, I've seen the movie, and I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it was.
Really good. I mean, powerful. And I wonder, by using the real footage at the very beginning, is that a good or a bad idea? What do you think?
I didn't like it, to be honest. I thought,
I'm not sure about it either.
Yeah, because, I mean, I suppose for American audiences, I mean, they were obviously very, very well aware of it, but for, you know, people like us that may not have been so clued into the story, it did kind of sap it of any kind of tension, really, you know, because you just know it's leading up to it. But having
said that, when it comes to the last 15 minutes, the actual build up of the cops taking them off the train and lining them up and all that, it is powerful.
It is.
And one of the reasons why it's powerful is because he's such a lovely guy. By the way, he's no way perfect.
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, that is one great thing about this film that I really, really did enjoy, is that, you know, it shows all the realities and the complexities of his world without necessarily being depressing or gritty. And it's not even politicized either, you know. Yeah. It's just like, this is his world, this is what he's in, and
doing the best he can. Just lost his job in the meat thing, in the supermarket, all the rest. Yeah. And lovely father and a good partner to the girlfriend and all the rest, and a great son, his mother's birthday.
Yeah, his mother's birthday as well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not telling anything to say the whole thing falls apart.
Oh, yeah, it does, absolutely.
In the first 2 minutes.
In the first 2 minutes, you see everything, and I mean, it's, you know, I know we're kind of knocking that they kind of sap the tension of it, but the whole film is him is leading up to that point, and it shows him, like you said, you know, being this wonderful father and a good man and all the rest of it. And then when it finally does start to happen,
and a very short temper as well.
He's
in jail and the mother there, and he starts.
It was really strong. But like, when it leads up to the bit to the train, you're just like, oh God, I don't want it to go the way I know it's going to go. And this is almost like a horror realization that this is the bit you start at the beginning and now it's going to lead to this.
And Ryan Coogler, whoever he is, a brilliant directorial. Yeah, that was his debut.
This was the first full length film, and actually now he is going to be directing a spin off of Rocky. Do you remember Apollo Creed from Rocky?
Oh yeah.
That he's going to be directing a spin off of that. It's going to be based on Apollo Creed's son, and Michael B. Jordan, who is in this, is going to play the son of Apollo Creed.
By the way, Michael B. Jordan, or whatever, watch that guy. He is a star in the making, I can tell you. He's brilliant. This thing cost under $1 million to make.
Under $1 million to make. Octavia Spencer, who plays the mother in the film, she put up her own money for it.
She's very good in this.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And Forest Whitaker as well put up his own money in this as well. So
is he in it?
No, he's not in it. He was one of the producers, but it just goes to show, like, I mean, that this, you know, had to be made outside mainstream Hollywood, and that these actors were very much, you know, they wanted to get this made, and it's a story that deserves to be made.
And it's more or less a docudrama kind of thing. So, but I'll tell you, it's powerful and it's well worth seeing. It's called Fruitvale Station. Fruitvale Station being one of the stations on the underground in Los Angeles. Yeah, and it's very good. Well worth a look, indeed. Now, anything else?
The next one I have is 22 Jump Street. This is the
which I hear is very good.
It is very good. Yeah, the sequel did fantastic, fantastic business, and, you know, very much liked by everybody. 22 Jump Street is basically the exact same story as 21 Jump Street, whereas the first one, it was two cops being sent into a high school to impersonate students and try to find a designer drug. Here it's the exact same story. They're going into a college, again, same thing, trying to find a designer drug. But what makes this, I know that kind of sounds like it's very, very lazy and it's just the same thing over and over again, but what makes this so interesting is the fact that the film is very, very meta. Like, it actually is completely aware of the fact that, you know, it is taking the mic out of itself, that it is just a really lazy retrod of the first one.
Right.
And the film has tons of references to the fact that it is taking the mick out of itself. Like, you have Ice Cube, who plays their captain. You know, his office is a glass cube and they refer to it as an ice cube. There's another one. And then there's another one where there's a character, one of the suspects plays for a football team, and the football team is called the Red Herrings. I mean, that's the kind of joke you're getting with. But I really enjoyed it,
Right, okay, 22. And of course, the guys were here in Dublin a few weeks ago.
That's right, yeah, they were here two weeks ago, yeah, Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. And, like, they have a fantastic chemistry and they're, you know, very much, leading the charge in this. And they were very, very funny, so it's great little comedy.
Okay, Grace of Monaco.
This is another comedy. Well, it's actually not supposed to be a comedy, but, did you see last year's Diana?
Actually, wait a minute now. Just let's take a look at this.
Yeah.
This is a princess.
Yep.
Who dies in a car crash.
Grace Kelly didn't die in a car crash.
Who what?
Grace Kelly didn't die in a car crash, did she?
Yeah, she did, yeah. Princess
did
Grace. Yeah,
I'm sorry,
yeah,
that's like, yeah, must have been,
yeah,
before,
no,
my
she
time.
No, she did, yeah. She did. And also played by an Australian actress.
An Australian actress. I did not know that about Grace Kelly
same
dying
story
in a car crash.
Yeah.
There,
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you'd have to wonder, like, after last year, like, that film Diana was just, a shambles. Like, it was just hilariously bad. You'd have to wonder, though, why would they actually attempt to do something similar again? You know, again, princess, yeah, Australian actress and all the rest of it. But Grace Kelly is played by Nicole Kidman. It takes place in the year of 1962. Grace Kelly has been married to Prince Rainier for a couple of years now, but she finds herself a little bit bored. Alfred Hitchcock comes knocking and he offers her the role of Marnie. And yet, while all this is happening, France is trying to, I suppose, possibly invade Monaco because of its kind of corporate tax regime or something like that. It's something that they don't pay tax or something, yeah, like that. French companies don't pay tax.
Principality and all that.
Yeah, principality and all the rest of it. And all while this is happening, there's a French spy in the court who's suspected of leaking private information about their family. So, I mean, there's a lot of different strains going on here, but the problem with the film is that it's too different. Like, you've got, on one hand, you've got, like, this possible spy thriller, you know, the fact that the Monaco court was, you know, invaded by French spies.
Yeah.
Then on the other hand, you've almost kind of got like a Disney film where you see Nicole Kidman running around in these beautiful dresses, learning all her lines and trying to get the whole, the charade of it all, sort of thing.
Bathed in very expensive light, I presume.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it's all, like, soft lighting and it's all about her dresses and all the rest of it. And it's just, I mean, like, it's just a complete mess of a film. It really, really is. I mean, she's trying to do the whole Grace Kelly thing, but she doesn't come across like an actual person. She just comes across like the sort of caricature that you'd see in all the old films. Tim Roth plays Prince Rainier. And he just looks like he just like goes around smoking in the background and muttering away, and he's got this little mustache and he just looks ridiculous. And you've got Frank Langella, who plays the priest that helps her out, and he inexplicably has an American accent, but he's not American. Apparently he was Italian. You have Parker Posey, who is a fantastic actress. I mean, she really is a great comedic actress, and she plays her Grace Kelly's handmaiden, and she's just completely underused. But I mean, the interesting thing about this is that the director, Oliver Dahan, he directed La Vie en Rose, which was that one about
that was great.
Yeah, Edith Piaf. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Marion Cotillard,
and that was a fantastic film. You know, he is able to do these kind of biopic films, but this is just.
Yeah, I think just, I get the impression Nicole at the Cannes Film Festival was trying to distance herself from it by the end.
By the end of it, yeah, and apparently seemingly it was booed off the stage as well when they all came on to talk about it afterwards. But to be honest, I can kind of see why, because, like, I mean, it doesn't really cast France or Charles de Gaulle or any of those people in a particularly positive light. I mean, they're basically the villains of the whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, it's Cannes,
right, well,
in the middle of France.
Thumbs very much up for Fruitvale Station, thumbs pretty much up for 22 Jump Street, and thumbs as down as possible for Grace
into the
of
ditch
Monaco.
Even.
It's actually called Grace of Monaco. Right?
Yeah,
that's the extra
indeed, track. Yeah.
Okay, DVD then. Just give us one for the weekend.
Lone Survivor. This is the one
with
Mark Wahlberg and Taylor Kitsch. This is about the Navy SWAT team, Navy SEAL team that were sent in to kill an Al-Qaeda leader, and sure enough, the whole thing goes wrong. Did you not find the title was terrible? Lone Survivor, like, you're just giving it away, aren't you?
It gives away the ending.
Yeah, it just completely gives away the ending. And you're, I mean, I know when you watch these kind of.
Do you think it's going to be Mark Wahlberg?
Possibly, yeah. Just possibly.
That's
but
true.
It's just, I mean, yeah, like, it was a great film.
It's
I really
like
enjoyed
the movie there. It's like, you know, like 12 Years a Slave. What's that about?
Well, he's a slave, and he's been a slave for 12 years. Well, there you go. But it was a great film, and it was really well done. And Peter Berg, he's known for doing
it is
these.
Well done.
He's known for doing these kind of really interesting action films. But this, I mean, the title, I can't get over how bad this.
A lot
title
of people
was.
Would have thought it was a bit too gung ho American kind of thing, and as these
yeah.
things are. But I thought it was tense. It was exciting. It was
yeah,
well done.
Very very tense and very
crazy.
Very exciting, but very much gung ho, like, you know, flag wave an American. I mean, I suppose. you know, for this kind of film, like, it kind of has to be, you know.
Some
like,
very gruesome scenes in it too.
Very, very scenes. The bit where he's falling down the mountain as well. And
banging off rocks.
Yeah, it's rough. But, I mean, to be fair, like, the film doesn't necessarily cast them as superheroes. I mean, they don't, as we say, like, they don't walk away from this unscathed. But, I don't know, the characters were a bit kind of, I don't know, one-dimensional. Like, you know, they're kind of, they're trying to cast them as, like, real people. Like, as in, oh, you know, we watch Anchorman and we like Coldplay and... But there's no real kind of meaningful any kind of interaction with them or any kind of analysis. It doesn't go into the fact that, like, these are Navy SEALs and these are people that are trained to kill other people.
Yeah.
And it doesn't kind of explore that kind of psychology at all.
Yeah, you could, the director could easily say, well, it was not meant to be that kind of movie.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, yeah. You have a point there. Okay, anyway, Lone Survivor's on DVD.
Yeah.
And Brian, we're going to go. So listen, thanks a million, Brian Lloyd, for dropping in.